started a legal fight to learn, you know, actually against the state of Ohio, the governor, National Guard, and everyone responsible for what happened. And that court battle lasted, went all the way through and up to the Supreme Court in order to have the right to sue Ohio, and then back at the beginning again. Over 10 years, we finally took it to the Ninth Circuit Court, got and settled with a statement of regret, and our family received $15,000 for the related to the death of my sister Allison.
Laurel, what are you calling for now?
Well, actually, I'm calling for the truth to be known for the first time. It's my feeling and the feeling of everyone that's joining us in our truth tribe. That's what we're calling it. Basically, we want to hear from the people that were on that hill because we know that they know what happened. And that includes National Guard, state, federal, and civil people, civil servants related to making decisions, bad decisions. We'd like to hear their stories as well. I'm personally calling for any National Guardsmen to please come forward in our final day, May 4th. Please come and share your truth. You'll be respected. We want to hear your truth. You can have anonymity. We have a wonderful setup. It's a healing environment. We'd like you to share your truth and let us know what happened and what made you wish, what made you pull that trigger and kill my sister and three others and wounding of nine on May 4th, 1970.
Laurel Krauss, we want to thank you very much for being with us, standing in the parking lot where her sister was killed 40 years ago today. Allison Krauss, that does it for the show. I'm Amy Goodman with Sharif Adokadu's Happy Birthday, Dennis Moynihan.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. And this week, we continue recounting the adventure that my friend Kyle and I had over in the Czech Republic. This was recorded back in January. And after this excerpt, we'll be back with an update as to just what we're doing today, at least what we think we're doing today. Stay tuned. Prague, the Czech Republic. Not really sure why they get to have republic in their name, you know. I mean, there's so many countries that are republics, and you always have to say the Czech Republic, you know. I think people in Europe say Czech. Some people might say Czechia, although that sounds too much like Chechnya.
Chechnya.
Yeah, which can lead to all kinds of misunderstandings.
Yeah.
But the point is we wanted to go to Prague, a really cool city. I've been to a couple of times, and
completely different language and completely different money system.
Yeah, they're in the EU, but they don't use the euro.
They
use
do not.
The Czech kroner.
That was news to me. I had no idea that their money was the same, yet they were part of the EU. That was totally totally foreign to me. I had no idea about that.
I wasn't sure about that, and apparently it was. It hasn't been agreed to yet by the Czech people, so they have to sort of work that out, and maybe they'll have the euro in the next year or two.
Oh, so it's in the works, so to speak. Okay,
so,
cool.
Yeah,
okay.
Pretty much.
We'll look out for that.
So we wound up in Prague.
Yeah.
And just sort of wandered around, tried to find out where we were staying, and it wasn't so bad. We figured it out after a while. Of course, we had to ride the metro. We had to ride all three different metros to get to where we were going. Of course, we probably didn't have to do that, but that's just sort of the way that that I routed it. I remember the last time I was in Prague, I ran into this problem where I was at the station and I didn't have their money, and there was no way to get their money in order to get a metro ticket.
This was helpful because before we actually got to Prague, mm-hmm. we changed a little money, didn't we?
Yeah, we changed money in Germany. We got some kroners so that we were ready for this.
You anticipated
you
might need some cash.
I thought this might happen again, and having the cash definitely helped. We went to a machine. We were able to actually buy the appropriate metro ticket so we could...
Two short ride tickets, enough to get us to where we're staying.
A short ride ticket being four or five stops, no more than that, and you only have 30 minutes to use it. But it's less than say, a full fare ticket.
And you get this, you know, credit card size ticket that is, you know, fluorescent, and it's got, you know, watermarks and holograms. I mean, it's very official. You validate it similar to the way you validate it in Germany. And
validate,
and
you basically, you stick it in a machine, the machine stamps it. Yeah, time stamps it, and that's your proof that you paid for a ticket. In case you get asked, because... Lots of times, and in Germany and many other countries, there's no real confirmation. You basically have a ticket. You're supposed to have a ticket, but you walk onto the train. There are no barricades. You just are on and being treated like an adult. And if anybody asks you, if somebody working for the Mass Transit Authority asks you and you don't have it, well, you get fined on the spot, as you should. Same thing in Czech Republic, so we had to figure out the system and know it well. So we found where we were staying. And kind of like a little shell shock, we just had a 5-hour train ride.
Yes, and it was quite long.
In a strange country.
Beautiful, though. It was great that we had it during the day. We got to see quite a bit of the landscape on the way into Czech Republic. But once we had gotten to where we were, we needed to find something authentic, something to really ground us in that different culture. We'd been in Germany quite a bit, and it was really about where could we celebrate and have a great, authentic Czech meal.
Yeah, that would be nice. That would be something. You know? We hopped on the internet because we had Wi-Fi in our room, and basically found a bunch of places, including one that was two doors down from where we were staying.
Yeah, funny how it ended up being. It wasn't very funny, was it?
Well, it was two doors down. I mean, you know.
But didn't we walk like 10 blocks to find it?
We did walk all over the place.
Okay, I'll own that. That was my directions. I've been a good navigator, though, on this trip.
You haven't. I have no sense of direction. You have a very good sense of direction. But we walked around Prague for quite a bit, you know, exploring and looking for various things. And
it was fun. It was
good. Wound up right back where we started.
We did. It was right next door.
Two doors down was this massive place. Where all these people were crowded in, and of course I didn't think we'd ever get into this place, and so we walk up to the door and we say, can we get a table for two, and they brought us right in. Of course, we had to go through, I think, three different rooms to get to our table.
Yes, he walked us, you know, through the main hall to the second hall, and then you know, put us at a bench table with you know, four other, you know, parties. You know, enjoying their meal and people...
Oh, they were doing more than enjoying their meal.
Oh, okay,
everybody
right.
was
dancing.
There was singing. There was people were holding mugs of beer up in the air.
Tuba, accordion. I mean, tradition. It was amazing.
This was unbelievable. We just walked into this place, and all of a sudden, we're in the middle of a party.
A huge party.
It was the biggest party I've ever seen. And supposedly, this place has something like 1,200 seats.
1,200, yeah.
So we were looking for authentic. We got authentic right
we
in our
definitely
face.
Definitely got authentic.
Absolutely. They just bring you beer. They assume that's what you're there
for.
Yeah,
we were no sooner did we, you know, run our fingers. Okay, I think this beer looks good. Yeah, I think I'll try that one. When he comes around, here it comes. Boom, beer's right on the table. They read our minds.
Yeah.
It was uncanny.
You can't not want beer if you're in this place. And then of course we had to order from the menu. Now there are things that they have in the Czech Republic that are staples, and pig's knuckles is one of them apparently. And other things roasted in well, what else but beer all day long is something else.
Yes, they have lots of pork meals, lots of gravy, a lot of cabbage, a lot of cabbage and sort of casserole things. And, of course, brats and like, au gratin potato type things.
Yeah.
It was really, really interesting to get that hearty Czech meal with the ambiance of this very traditional place. Just everyone singing.
And people just get to know each other. We were talking to the people across from us, who are a couple from Philadelphia. The people next to us, who seemed to be from somewhere in the eastern part of Russia, they were Asian, but they were speaking Russian.
Absolutely.
Other people on the next table, they were Italian.
Yes.
Everybody became best of friends within the matter of maybe a half an hour or so, toasting each other and talking about various things. And there was no better way of just, I guess, communing with the human race.
There were no barriers, no you know, quiet conversation. Everybody sort of broke the ice as soon as we sat down. It was, hey, you're part of the family. You're at our table.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the service there was brisk. We got everything we ordered, and everything was just there for us so that you could really soak up the environment and, yeah. And have that fun with everyone else. You know, yeah. It didn't take much time at all before we were, you know, cheering the couple that stands up to dance together and, you know, helping people take pictures with the accordion player. You know, oh, all of a sudden we're the, you know, photographer for their trip uh-huh. and all of that. It was just really, really fun.
Yeah. So. I think we got really lucky just finding a place like that so close to where we were staying. But there are a number of places like that in Prague where you have all the traditional type of fare and celebration and things like that. And I was surprised at how easily we fell into that. It was yeah. it was very, very cool.
It's quite fun.
And we walked around.
Explore a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, we walked around afterwards the next day or two and, mm-hmm. and just we saw the Prague Castle. We went there in the evening.
Yes,
and,
we did.
And that is a really cool time to go there. You climb up this What would you call it? Is it a mountain? Is it a hill?
We had been looking for it, and we had seen it off in the distance. We weren't sure because of
you'd
where
you'd think you'd be able to find the Prague Castle. It's the biggest thing in the city, but
right.
I couldn't find it. It was there somewhere, but we took trams all over the place. We got a day pass.
We had to cross the river mm-hmm. and get to that part of town, and then you get the sense, okay, it's up on that hill.
Wait, do you want to talk about how hard it was to get the day pass for the transit? Because
oh, you're right.
Yeah, we tried to do that, and that was insane. Basically, we
mentioned this. Yeah, you
a day pass.
Yeah, we couldn't get cash.
Right, you have to pay for the day pass, obviously. And we went down to the metro and wanted to pay for the day pass. The machine only took
coins.
Didn't take bills. Didn't take credit cards. We didn't have that many coins.
And we couldn't get cash exchanged at the restaurant, as the booth attendant had told us.
Yeah, there's a guy in the booth.
By the office phone and said, go to the restaurant.
Yeah. He said, go to the restaurant. You know, I can't give you change. I don't know what his purpose was, but basically we had to go upstairs, ask at a restaurant who had no intention of giving us anything. In fact, we bought a beer at this place.
Yeah, we bought a liter of beer just
thinking we'd get change.
It kind of backfired, but it was a start.
It was a start. Then you went to the bathroom and paid to go to the bathroom.
Oh, my
the bathroom
God. That was a dive. You know, there was a police officer in the bathroom that spoke English and an old woman in a little booth that kept saying, five kroner to use the restroom. I had to use the restroom. I was trying to hand her a hundred kroner bill, and she just blew up. Oh, are you kidding? Do you think I'm crazy? No, she said five kroner. And so I eventually paid to use
so
the restroom.
So we wound up with less change.
Less change, and yeah, we lost at that point. It was terrible. But we managed to walk up the block.
Well, no. We should be honest about
this. Okay, you're right.
We had to walk into the metro system, meaning that we were evading the fare. Because the only way to get to the other side easily was to cut through the entire system.
You know, it was really cold outside.
It was very cold.
And we did not technically get on a train. We simply used the escalator system mm-hmm. and the pathway to the other escalator.
But as soon as you pass by the entrance to the station, you are, in fact, committing fare evasion if you don't have a ticket. We wanted a ticket. We had money. We were trying to pay for the ticket, but there was no way to buy a ticket. Nobody would give us change.
Oh, were we trying.
So we eventually walked through the entire station, exited on the other side, and finally found a bar that would give us change. Or they were quite pleasant about it, in fact. Went back, bought our damn ticket, and started riding around. Got on a tram. Of course, went the wrong way again like we usually
do. The 22, yes. We found out how far south the 22 goes.
It goes pretty far south.
It was very south.
Yeah. And then we realized we had to go the other way to get to the castle.
That's right. Yes. You take the other direction on the 22. That gets you across the river. And on that side of town, you can actually ride very close to the bank of this hill where the castle is. We got off the tram. We were able to sort of walk around. At this point, it was getting on to early evening, a little bit dark, but it was beautiful the way this entire castle was lit up from below. And
the cobblestone streets and just the narrow roads and just the sense of history everywhere you went. People simply going about their business, going from one place to another, but realizing this place existed for many hundreds of years, just like this.
And could you believe how quiet it got? You'd turn one corner, and it was just silence. Mm-hmm. You're in this very tiny, rustic little street in a back alley, and it felt good. It felt warm, like you're really exploring it.
And it was really cold, too.
It was very cold. but warm and just glowing with that rich culture that's unique, you know, cool old buildings. So we eventually made our way around and crossed through a small park and then found this long stairwell that leads up to the castle. And there were quite a few tourists, a lot of people exiting this and going up this stairwell. So we figured, okay, this must be it. This is the entrance to the castle. We got to go up this stairwell. And that's what we ended up doing. And so we began our way up and saw this incredible cathedral lit up and just glowing at the center of this castle entrance. And it was sort of the spectacle, the gem of the castle itself, which you got the sense it was much bigger. Mm-hmm. That this compound was extending a long way across the top of this hill. But it was really beautiful to look at this old cathedral and just walk around the whole thing and explore a little bit and try to figure out why they have two clock dials.
Yeah, the two clock dials. That was weird.
Yes, but we eventually figured it out. One is a minute hand, one is for the hour.
And they have different clocks for the minute and different clocks for the hour.
That's right. So it was amazing.
Glad they figured out how to combine those two, because it would have been a pain in the ass to walk around with two watches all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
So, so we did that, and it was amazing. Went back the next... Oh, are we out of... we need more wine.
I think we are.
Okay,
yeah,
hold on. Right. Here we go. Is that enough?
A little more.
All right.
That's fine. Yeah, that's
good.
Fine.
Okay, and I'll have some myself. I'll do a little more. Right up to the top there. Yeah. Boy, it's always sad when the bottle ends,
it's,
you know?
It's really quite...
So, yeah, where were we? We were in Prague.
Yes.
We wanted to leave Prague at some point. Because we have
cheers.
To get back. Cheers.
There you go.
So we were figuring we wanted to get to back to Germany because, it's one step closer to Frankfurt, our final destination. But also we wanted to visit the people at the Club Mate plant where they make the energy drink that hackers are simply going crazy over. And we figured it would be nice to sort of drop in on them. We decided to buy a train ticket to Nuremberg, and then eventually from there to the small town where the brewery actually existed. And I went on the website of Deutsche Bahn, the German rail, to buy the train ticket, and found out that the train ticket actually was a bus. A bus ticket.
I can't believe that, but it is.
The bus was faster.
A Deutsche Bahn bus, no less.
Yeah, Deutsche Bahn bus.
Yeah,
DB bus. But it's faster than the train, so okay, whatever.
I could not believe that.
No,
I couldn't believe it was faster, but there you go.
And I figured, you know, that buying the ticket online, as always, would be simpler, and you could simply...
Which I think is a good point. You raise a good point. Explaining to someone that at a Czech train station that you need a German bus... that can get complicated in translation.
Yeah,
you don't want to go there.
As soon as I saw a German bus at the Czech main train station, I realized, you know, let alone finding the bus, but finding the person to sell you the ticket for that bus. I've been to Poland, all right, and I've tried to do that in Warsaw, and you need to plan a day for that.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to get a damn ticket, and it was very simple. On the on the German rail line, you simply click a few things, enter your credit card information, bingo, you have a PDF, which is your ticket. However, when you get that PDF, that's when they tell you, this PDF is not valid, you need to actually print it out in order for anybody to accept it. So, you know, I didn't think that was a big deal at that point either. We'd go downstairs to the hotel reception, have them print it out.
We prepared for this.
You know,
we made a copy and put a copy on a jump drive, then you had some emails prepared. Just in case, so we made sure that the people in the lobby, no matter what way they needed, we would be able to accommodate them so that they could help us get this ticket printed.
No,
you know?
Problem.
No,
but,
problem.
You know, it was a problem.
Oh, yeah. So we had about 40 minutes at this point, and we,
I think we had about an hour.
About an hour,
when
okay.
We started the
in,
whole
in
process.
The lobby, yes. Okay, yeah. I'm sorry. We had an hour in the lobby. You're absolutely right. So we... mosey down there and ask them in our best English
Our best English.
Our clearest, most succinct, and just delicately, could you please print this document? And you were, you know, emailing them. I don't know exactly how that went.
Email us the
link to the website. Work.
Well, we emailed. Okay, here's the thing. They asked me to email them the link to the website. They said it would take 5 minutes for the email to arrive.
Doesn't make any sense.
No, it makes
to
no
me
sense
at all.
So I did that though. I emailed them the link to the actual PDF file so they could print that out. And then after a few minutes, I realized, you know, just to be safe, I'm also going to email them the PDF itself. I'm going to attach it and email it to them. And
so at that point, he had said, "Computer says no. We can't get that link up. It's 5 minutes before you get the next." And you said, "Well, I've already sent the next file, so it should be on its way." We waited a couple more minutes, and you had the second email with the PDF attached. And he again says, "Computer says no. We can't print it."
Computer says no. Yeah, the thing is, I mean, literally, they couldn't read the URL. They couldn't go to the website. And they just kept waiting around for that second email to show up. And they just kept shaking their head. No computer.
Did you ever get a look at the screen? You couldn't really see exactly what he was doing?
I couldn't duck my head around that much to see what was actually on the screen. I just know that he kept looking at it and shaking his head. And by this time, we were 40 minutes away.
We're looking at 40 minutes.
From departure.
And I offered the jump drive that I had prepared. I had put a ticket on it. A PDF ticket and renamed it bus ticket and offered it. I said, "Well, can you plug this in?" And he said, "No, your computer says no, we can't do that."
I think manager said no to that because that is kind of a security
hole
to plug a, you know, any kind of a external device onto a machine. So I can sort of understand that. I can't understand why they couldn't print something from a damn website. That was insane. And just their attitude was just, "Nope, this is just the way it is. And there's nothing we can do. You have to do something else." So
at this point, we said no and left and jumped on a tram so that we could get to the actual train station. We figured, you know what? There's got to be somebody there that can print this. We're not going to sit here and arm wrestle you to use your computer the right way. We know you can print things. You have a printer. All right, we're out of here. So we take the tram. We then connect to a metro, and we get to Hauptbahnhof in Praha.
So, I think it's called Hauptbahnhof. It's called, I don't know what it's called, but the Prague main train station.
Okay, Praha main.
Yeah.
Their main station where we immediately locate the bus.
No, it wasn't immediate. We had to run around a while to ask a bunch of people, where are the damn buses? This is a train station.
We went
to a platform and there were trains there instead of buses, so we knew we were in the wrong place. We had to find the bus. And then once we found the bus, we figured, okay, maybe we can just cut this short, show the guy the PDF on the computer.
So here we have laptops open.
Laptops
we're showing him
open.
On screen.
Yeah.
And bus driver says, "No, we can't look. We can't let you on with just a screen."
You can't let you on your bus.
Are you kidding? Yeah, buddy, we'll let you on. Okay, no.
So I ask him, "Where do we print it out?" I don't have no idea. Nobody knows the answer to the questions here. They just know how to say no, and they don't know what the solution is.
Thankfully, we knew where the bus was, and we had at least 15, 20 minutes, maybe 25 minutes to go.
I think we had 15. I think we
okay,
only 15 had 15
minutes. It was getting tight.
It was
getting
tight,
really tight, and
but
we're sweating buckets already just finding the bus.
Yeah.
So
all we had to do now was find some way to print out the ticket for us.
And we first thing we did is run back in. I went to a money exchange. I went to a cell phone sales booth.
You went to a cell phone store and started using their computers.
Well, I attached a jump drive. I asked a woman. She didn't quite understand. She said, "Yep, use this laptop. It's network. Yeah, go ahead." I think she was allowing me to use the web, but I was attaching a jump drive trying to print on their printer in the store. Didn't work.
Unfortunately, the printer was hooked up to a fax machine. So
well, yeah,
we could have faxed it, but we couldn't print it.
I don't think it was even installed. It was offering me fax, but at any rate, it did not work. And they actually found out that I had put this jump disc onto their machine and were quite unhappy and asked us to move along. Well, not before we asked, "Where can we go, please?"
We kept asking these people everywhere, and people kept saying, "No, we can't do it. Go over here." And it was very Kafka-esque. It really was. There was no more appropriate place to be
How
than
fitting.
Prague to have something like this happen where you just have this bureaucracy telling you you can't do something and just go to the next person and have them tell you the same thing. And, of course, the clock is ticking the whole time. And we're just running around. There are all these massive queues, massive offices and lines. And
we made our way to the ticket, the main ticket booth. where a
for trains though
Czech rail woman suggested go to the travel desk. Well, one side of the travel desk was sort of for like American travel outside of Europe, and he was
American
helping.
Travel outside of
it
Europe.
It said travel in American, and it was like, you know,
English, English, right? Said in English. Not American. I mean, you know, it could be...
No, it was written in English.
Okay.
But it, you had the
but not
sense...
not just for Americans, is my
no,
point.
No, it was for people traveling to exotic places such as America.
Oh!
You know, or
wait,
or
America's
whatever.
Exotic to these people?
Who knows?
Wow.
I don't know. But it was not the right desk, and the guy was helping someone who was handicapped. She had a crutch, and she was taking her time, and he was accommodating
her. Yeah, you can't really cut
her
in front of
you
somebody with
a
crutch.
You can't do that. We were not going to, you know, bring our stressful time crunch onto this this woman. She's obviously trying to get things done. So we go to the opposite end, which is the comprehensive desk. In all Czech, the only thing that says in English is comprehensive and domestic travel, and we were not traveling domestically. I don't understand how this – ordinarily this wouldn't have made any sense, but I said, you know what? You know, we're going to get this done. So I run across the ticket room to this comprehensive desk, and there's a woman in there eating a candy bar. She's halfway through her candy bar, about my age, a young gal, and she drops the candy bar. Jumps from her desk as I hand her the jump drive and says, I cannot possibly put this into my – I cannot print from my computer. And she runs to the back of the office. She literally disappears with my jump disk and saying something about, you know, I will talk to my supervisor, that kind of thing. At this point, you caught up with me, and I'm sort of reporting to you.
I brought all the bags and things over to the other side of this huge room.
But we had 10 minutes at this point. I mean, we're really, you know, I
it
left
was more
my
like
bags.
7 minutes,
right?
More
okay,
like seven,
was,
and I was
really.
I didn't even come inside the office. I was standing outside because I just didn't want to hear any other people say no. I was just going nuts. I just was watching your progress and just...
You were hopeful, but I think you were...
Holding
erring.
Up enough fingers to tell you how much time we had. I think five,
yeah,
four.
Yeah, exactly. It was,
and
it
then
was,
just a thumbs down. This
yeah,
is not going
to
work.
Yeah, I think it got to a thumbs down at that point. Yeah, it was getting close, and I think you sort of gave up a little bit at that point. But I had this thumb drive that was not in my possession. I was like, well, look, I don't care how late we are. I'm not going to leave my hardware with someone. And she came back once to check on me, which gave me a little glimmer of hope. So we're out of time at this point. She comes back and says, my supervisor is printing this out, and disappears again. And I'm like, well, okay, she's printing it out. That's great. Okay, we'll wait, you know, maybe 3 more minutes, and she runs back in the room. At this point, I'm you know, you're convinced we're going to miss this bus, and I'm like, okay, at least she's got my heart. She has the ticket printed out.
I was
out.
Convinced we had missed the
yeah,
bus.
Yeah, we had missed it.
Yeah.
I had this absolutely astounded look on my face, and she's saying, I've had my supervisor call the bus driver, and I was blown away by this. And she hands me a laser printed copy of the ticket. She gives me my jump drive back. I have barely enough time to thank her profusely and walk out. I can't even process that she's done this amazing thing by contacting the bus driver. I had not expected that at all, and I was so gracious of her.
And we had to tear through the station. I always hate doing this. We had
our
to tear through the station, running at breakneck speed. Which
our last sprint.
Yeah, well, your last sprint. I had heavy bags, so I couldn't really run that fast.
And negotiating locked doors.
All you had to do was get there and hold the bus. And I was trying as best as I could to get
And it wasn't me
there.
Holding the bus. When I got there, the supervisor, some woman from Czech Rail, was standing with the bus driver.
Amazing.
And when I showed up and waved to her, she was pointing at me saying, he's the man. He's the man.
You were the man. You managed to stop the bus from leaving. I don't know how you pulled this off, but you did. And meanwhile, I'm finally catching up, climbing all these stairs and trying to get out to where the bus is. And I can't get out the goddamn door. The door won't open. I'm there. Banging on the door. The bus is there. You're there. Can't figure out how to get outside. It was the most frustrating thing in my life.
It was 3 doors over.
Apparently the first 2 doors don't open. You have to keep going down until you get to the one that does open.
It was
a final stab in the back from Prague.
It was fun for me to watch.
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
Well, at that point, I knew we had the bus, and it was just sort of like you were really upset at that door. And
It was a great, momentous way, memorable way to leave Prague. Almost as memorable as our arriving and celebrating with all the people. Yeah, you know, it's all that said, though, it's an amazing place. I totally recommend it. The bus took us to Nuremberg, and then to...
And that was a fun bus
ride. It was a fun bus ride. It was a short bus ride.
Never imagined we'd be on a bus during this trip, and it was quite enjoyable.
Buses. I hate buses usually.
It seemed to work quite well.
I wasn't pleased with the snack situation, because apparently they say they have snacks, and they really didn't have any snacks.
They had no snacks that they had advertised, and we knew we were in Germany when we got cell phone coverage. It seems like our European phones didn't seem to work quite as well as we were going through the highways in Czech. But as we got to the German border, everything started working, and we ended up in Nuremberg, final destination for the bus.
And then we took a train from there to the small town that we were staying in. And the next day, we were able to get a tour of the Club Monte facility. Unfortunately, we're starting to run low on time, not because of the show so much as because we have reservations at a restaurant we have to get to. But basically, Kyle, can you briefly tell us something about the Club Monte plant in this very small town in the middle of Bavaria in Germany?
Sure, very quickly. I'd be happy to expand on this further, but it was a very small town, a village, actually. And this Loscher facility distributes beer to people within 50 kilometers of the plant itself. It's a very small facility. Manuel remarked that it was quite large from his sense of it, and I think the brunt of the size of it was because of the way they need to decant large volumes of beer before it's put into kegs and bottles. And for each stage of the beer making process, it needs to be in very large vessels. And so those took up a certain part of the brewery and were very professionally installed. I mean, you got the sense this was a family business. This was practically their home. These large vessels were installed, and he ran us through everything. Mm-hmm. He showed us where it was cooled, where it was brewed for long periods of time. Everything was food-grade stainless steel, there was even a section dedicated just to water purification. He told us that their water comes from two wells, local wells from this part of Bavaria, and it is filtered and purified to such a quality that it can be given to infants. And that's a big deal. A lot of bottled waters in Europe and elsewhere are labeled whether they can be used with infant formula or not. So basically, they use very, very high quality water. And as he was showing us the plant, he moved us into the Club Monte section, which is distinctly different from the way that they brew, which is large batches in large decanting containers. The Monte is mixed very quickly. They mix they have a small section about the size of a Sub-Zero fridge or a couple of refrigerators, and it involves a pressurized stainless steel column for sugar and a pressurized stainless steel column for water, and they use piping and pressure gauges and pumps, of course, to take those two ingredients as well as an extract that is probably pumped in with a much smaller setup from disposable containers, because it's made in another facility entirely. They don't actually deal with the mate itself. The extract comes in small containers, and they probably tube it into the mixing machine with these two large stainless steel columns that have the sugar and water. So the three ingredients take up about the size of a couple refrigerators, and they are precisely mixed and calibrated, and we were told that there's some secret involved in how that's done, and
yes,
some proprietary stuff, and the facility was not completely working at this point. It was sort of shut down for maintenance and just to show us, basically. It was an off day for the workers, which was something we noticed. They tend to take care of their workers, who during the summer are just working intensely on getting beer and Club Mate out to the world. So
they give them all this extra time off in the winter, half day the day we went there, and a holiday the day after that. And you just get the sense that everybody cares. About 30 employees altogether.
Yeah.
Like you said, family-run business, fifth generation at this company. Mm-hmm. The father lives on site. Various other members of the family live right there. And the Mr. Loscher, who showed us around, lives only a couple of blocks away. It was incredible.
So the other end of the Club Monte process is largest part of that part of the brewery, and it is all in one section. The mixer is one part of this room. The other large part of the room is split in half between a very large bottler machine with a conveyor and a very large washer machine. So the mixing takes up very little space, and that's then piped over into the bottling machine. So what they do is they either take new bottles or recycled bottles that come in on deposit. They're in plastic crates, and these crates are loaded into the washer. The washer is completely automated, and you get the sense that everything is very clean. The entire brewery was tiled. Every room had drains so that they could do a full washdown of everything. Everything was very sanitary and incredibly well maintained. So the washing machine itself it takes care of every single bottle with very hot water, I'm sure, and rinses them out, sends them back by these plastic crates on the conveyor into the bottler. The bottler pulls each bottle out of the crate, fills it with Club Mate at the precise mixing that has been calibrated on the smaller machine I mentioned, and then caps them, and it's labeled. They are put back into the plastic crates, and the plastic crates then move on a conveyor to another part of that section of the warehouse where they're then palletized and ready for shipment. And they told us that they can produce as much as 80,000 bottles a day, which is incredible. And wow. They're planning on expanding this section of the Club Mate plant. So
there you go. That was our look at the Club Mate plant, and it was quite an eye-opener. I was very impressed with just the sincerity of it all, the advertising, the fact they don't do any advertising. We were talking with them,
and they don't do any advertising whatsoever. And you get the sense that they took this recipe, this Club Mate drink, they took that over from another smaller family-owned brewery. And the person that sold them that brewery wanted to hand it, to pass it on to another family that would create this craft drink in the very same way.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really amazing, really special to hear their sincerity and authenticity. And that is why Club Mate is such a special drink. You can drink other kinds of beer. You can drink other sorts of soda pop beverages. But this Club Mate is not made anywhere else with the same amount of love and special sort of unique manufacturing. They do this absolutely distinctly. They have an incredible amount of experience with it, and they love doing it. And
yeah,
the people that drink it support them. The CCC guys come back year after year. He's like, yeah, you guys have seen mountains and mountains of bottles. You know, you saw that 2 years ago. You guys still want to come back and see? You guys have seen this before.
It's a pilgrimage. It's like Mecca for hackers to go to this place and actually be amongst all these bottles of Club Mate. So, you know, I don't want to sound like a commercial or anything like that, but it is something unique and kind of precious, I think. And also just an eye-opener on how businesses are run in other parts of the world. And
it doesn't take a huge amount of production capacity or space to make something that has a worldwide acclaim, you know, mm-hmm. and people that support it. And it's that word of mouth, that lack of advertising, that sort of family of, hey, we like what you're doing, we will support it. And so it's really special. And I think a lot of the projects that are coming out of hacking and the technology community, open and free community, I think it's the same sentiment of supporting community and supporting people that are doing unique things and special things that need that following and sharing. You know, hey, you do this, well, we do this. You know, we're good with computers. We're good with, other sorts of mechanical things. Everybody needs to be celebrated. And it was really fun to see what they do. Sort of, they do it no problem. And to us, it was just mind-blowing to see where this drink, this magical drink, comes from.
In the middle of a small town, too. Amazing. Well, we have to be somewhere in 5 minutes, and it's a 10-minute walk, so we should be going. But, Kyle, it's been amazing. It's been an amazing trip, just wandering around these parts of Europe with you, and Here we are in Frankfurt, about to head back to the States.
Here we are, yeah.
I have a feeling we're going to have some more interesting adventures ahead.
I think so. I really enjoyed this. I think you and I, we've had a lot of fun together, and we work well taking all this stuff in. And I'm really thankful to the people and the communities here in Europe to host us, and to, you know, all the English-speaking people, all the people that don't speak English, but they try. I just have really been overwhelmed with the amount of sincerity that we get from being overseas, but, you know, yet feeling like we're at home.
And maybe just as a final comment, if you could speak to people out there who might be listening to this show, thinking about embarking on some kind of adventure, or maybe even thinking that it's impossible for them to embark on some kind of adventure overseas or something like that. I know you were in a situation a few years ago where you were somebody listening to the show that
absolutely
didn't think maybe they would ever do something like this. What do you say to people that haven't quite taken that step yet?
Plan well. Set up your life so that you can leave for a little bit. Obviously, it's a logistical thing, but be ready to and travel light. Don't bring a whole bunch of baggage, and I mean mentally and physically. Be open. Be willing to travel with your eyes open and a sense of curiosity, and be just be open, be flexible. Don't try to plan every single moment of your trip. There's no way we could have known we needed a bus at one point. There's no way we could have planned for every single train ride. You need to give yourself time as well. I gave myself several weeks to be over here, and I wanted to simply get away and really push myself as a traveler and soak up language and get a sense of the world other than what I get at home. It's great to have the web and all these global things, but it's a totally different thing to share that experience and to see it with your own eyes and become a part of the community and the culture and what people are doing in any situation. So I would just definitely encourage people to don't overthink it, and don't think that every minute of it you can anticipate. There's chance in everything. You have to let go and let go of thinking that it's going to be completely foreign or it won't work out or you won't be able to do things. You absolutely can. Just create the possibility in your life and in your mind, and you'll be amazed at the results and what's available and what you can do. So.
All right. Well, that's incredible, and I hope it continues to be incredible. It's been a blast. Kyle, until next time.
Absolutely.
So, we didn't have to wait very long till next time. It's now April, and we're overseas right now in the former Yugoslavian Republic. Right, Kyle?
Absolutely. God willing, we've made it there in relation to all this emergency with volcanic ash and uncertainty about getting over it all. We finally made it.
Well, yeah, you know, actually, we're still standing here in New York, but here's what happened. Since we actually did an update that aired a couple of weeks ago when we were driving into the city in the rain, that was only a few days ago for us, but for you, it seemed like 2 weeks. Weird how physics works. But what happened since then, we were talking about the volcanic ash that was erupting, and since then, our plans kind of got scuttled. We had originally planned on flying into Germany and then taking a train down from Germany through Austria to Slovenia and then starting the whole former Yugoslavian tour. Well, all those planes were canceled because for some reason we had to fly through London. I guess that's how I got a cheap fare. But all the London flights were canceled. They still are, in fact. But what I was able to do, and a tremendous credit must go to my friend Reed, who stayed up all night helping me find alternative travel plans for a little bit extra. He was able to figure out a way to get us to fly directly into Yugoslavia 1 day later. So we'll be flying into Zagreb in Croatia and then flying out of Belgrade in Serbia. And that's great for us for a couple of reasons. It takes, well, first of all, it gets us there, unlike everybody else who can't seem to get to Europe right now. We're going to a less popular destination and a more southerly destination. But the really good thing about this is that we get more time to spend in the former Yugoslavia, and that was a problem in our initial itinerary. We had to travel too much to get from other countries, get from Germany, Austria, and then afterwards getting over the Adriatic Sea to Italy. And wanting to see all the places, it just seemed like too much of a breakneck pace that we had to keep. So it's actually worked out to our advantage where we can spend a bit more time in the places that we wanted to go to, namely the former Yugoslav republics. Of course, that is assuming that we do take off, and we're supposed to take off tomorrow, which is the 20th of April. You're hearing this on the 4th of May, at least you should be. Or you might be listening to it later, but yeah, I think we made out okay if this actually works.
Yeah, I think this goes right along with us being able to roll with a little bit of the uncertainty and come up with a backup plan or an alternative. And I'm thankful that you put in the effort and we're able to find some people that could help us come up with another plan. But it's looking like it's going to happen. We're watching the news very, very closely now, and as you're hearing this, hopefully we're touring around and getting a good jump on our trip with these extra hours and days and the reduction in travel as far as getting from Germany down to the former Yugoslavian Republic. So I think this is, again, goes right along with our history and...
Yo siento, esta noche va a ser buena noche, esta noche va a ser buena noche, esta noche va a ser buena, buena noche, presiento, esta noche va a ser buena noche, esta noche va a ser buena noche, esta noche va a ser buena, buena noche. Siento, esta noche va a ser buena noche, esta noche va a ser buena noche, esta noche va a ser buena, buena noche, presiento, esta noche va a ser buena noche, esta noche va a ser buena noche, esta noche va a ser buena, buena noche.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of the sports section. But it's not the sports section tonight. Tonight it's America East lacrosse. It's playoff action, and the Stony Brook Seawolves, the number six team in the country, will be taking on the Vermont Catamounts once again. Stony Brook looking to advance to the championship game on Saturday and then possibly the NCAA tournament. With the pregame show, Brendan Chamberlain and Frank Barilli. Take it away, guys.
Laval Stadium for playoff lacrosse here at Laval Stadium between the Stony Brook Seawolves and the Vermont Catamounts part due. And Frank Stony Brook on Saturday night took care of business, went 5-0 in the America East. And now here we are on a beautiful Tuesday night here at Laval Stadium in the first round, the semifinals of the America East Championships.
Yeah, just to give a little backdrop to the fans listening, it was supposed to be thunderstorms for about 3-4 hours right before the game. It was only a 30% chance of precipitation, and that didn't happen, as you said. It's very bright and sunny, kind of warm out, perfect weather for a lacrosse game. Stony Brook was 5-0 in the conference, so they're number one. They've got the home seed for the whole tournament should they advance to the next round. And Vermont, coming in at number four, draws the number one seed. So they've had to travel from Burlington, Vermont, which is probably a six-hour drive or so, last Saturday and back, and now on Tuesday again. The game was originally slated for Wednesday night, and because Vermont had final examinations, this game got moved to tonight, a day ahead of time. So we're hoping for another good one. It was 16-10 just a couple days ago. Stony Brook ran up the score 7-0 by the middle of the second quarter, but Vermont fought back and made it somewhat of a respectable score, and I'm expecting another high-scoring event tonight.
And we look tonight towards Stony Brook Seawolves having a great season so far with, the national polls have just recently come out. The Stony Brook Seawolves are now sixth in the country. The RPA rankings have come out. They're ranked currently ninth in the RPA rankings. And Stony Brook's had some all-conference players this year, and Frank's going to elaborate about the all-conference players.
Yeah, we can run through that real quick. The about half of the starting lineup is on the America East first team, which just came out, I think, earlier this afternoon. On attack, Tom Compitello, the local product from Hop Hog, New York, and Jordan McBride from Western Canada. Both juniors, both attackmen on the first team. Kevin Crowley, the standout midfielder, is leading the country in scoring from the midfield, might I add, a junior from Western Canada as well on the first team. And also Steve Waldeck, the outstanding senior captain and long stick midfielder who has excelled in any position they've put him on the field. He's got almost 100 ground balls in the season, 8 goals and 3 assists, which is outstanding for a long stick midfielder. And Charlie Parr, somewhat of a surprise in the goal, leading the America East in save percentage, made it on the first team. On the second team is Adam Rand, the junior from Niantic, Connecticut, leading the country individually in face-off percentage and got a ton of ground balls to boot as well. So Stony Brook doing really well in terms of the all-conference team. And the most important one possibly is Kevin Crowley getting Player of the Year in the America East and Rick Soule garnering Coach of the Year honors for 2010.
Well-deserved for Rick Soule. He's done an excellent job here under at his time here at Stony Brook University. But Frank, let's talk about tonight's game. Tonight's game is an interesting matchup because, 3 days ago, the Stony Brook Seawolves, it's a tale of two halves. They were up 7-0 at half, 7-0, and then all of a sudden, things began to unravel. A couple players got injured. A couple of guys that don't normally get playing time got out there, and the Stony Brooks had some laps. The Stony Brook Seawolves had some laps on defense in that second half. And what do you think tonight's keys to the games are?
I think a couple of things. One is that Stony Brook gave up a goal right before half and right at the end of the game, last game. That's devastating to any team, even though it counts the same as a goal scored during any other minute of the game. They have a pattern of this type of behavior on defense for the last, I don't even know how many seasons, but you don't want to have that happen. You don't want a devastating goal for a team to catch up by one going into the locker room at half. Another thing, I think they want to keep the ball out of Vermont's hands. Last game, we saw Vermont actually keep the score respectable by holding onto the ball with long offensive possessions. And by long, I mean 120 seconds and longer. Keeping the ball for 60 seconds at a time might be considered long, depending on what teams you're watching. But Vermont was keeping it sometimes 2.5 minutes at a clip, and therefore keeping it out of Stony Brook's hands, where their high-octane offense can really pump a lot of goals in very quickly.
And we talk about how high-octane offense, and the Stony Brook Seawolves have been known for, when Frank was a player, was a defensive strong team, and now the team has really transitioned into an offensive force and, an opportunistic defense. It'll be very interesting tonight to see how the Stony Brook Seawolves come out with their brand new, newly minted white helmets, and as you know, we always talk about our uniforms here at Stony Brook. Frank, why don't you elaborate about these beautiful, shining white helmets right now?
Sure. As a matter of fact, just on Saturday against Vermont right here at Laval Stadium, Stony Brook did come out with a different look. They wore their red helmets, their white home jerseys, and instead of their white shorts, they eschewed them and wore their road red shorts, which was a good look. And if you go onto the website on GoSeaWolves.org, you can see some great photos of the game. Tonight, they're back with the white shorts, the home white jerseys, and they've changed up the helmet situation. For the first time this year, they're wearing all white helmets, which I hear is courtesy of your younger brother, Sean Chamberlain.
Don't know anything about that.
2007 graduate and starting attackman who had a very successful career here at Stony Brook. And from what I understand, was also a state bowling champ back in Ohio.
I can't confirm or deny that. What I would like to say, though, is that white uniform, maybe it's the Canadian influence of the Stony Brook Seawolves, McBride, and Crowley. You know, the Vancouver Canucks are known for their whiteout games where they have the whiteout, all the fans with the whiteout. But it'll be very interesting. So just some housekeeping items that we have to take care of for tonight's game as we're getting ready to face off. We're going to go through the starters very quickly. For Vermont, Derek Lechfis, as well as Liam Thomas. In the goal is going to be David Barton. We're going to go through this numerically. Number seven, Jeff Worley, an attackman. A defenseman, Evan O'Brien, number nine. Matt Jankow, a defenseman. A midfielder, Garrett Virtue. An attackman, Drew Fillet. He's actually started a midfield on Saturday night. He's going to start an attack tonight. Number 33, Granger Jewett. And the final defenseman, Cal Case. And then we're going to let you go forward and talk about Stony Brook Seawolves lineup.
Sure, I can even do this one off memory for you if you like.
Absolutely.
Stony Brook attack has been pretty much the same all year. You're going to have the junior from New Westminster, Jordan McBride, two-time All-America candidate, number 11, starting out there. Also number 23, Tom Compitello, the local product from Hopog, and also Kyle Belton, the sophomore from British Columbia, will be out there. He's going to be wearing number 12. On midfield, you can see Robbie Campbell, number 37, the sophomore out there, with Kevin Crowley, another New Westminster Salmon Belly, number 21, the junior. And he's the America's Player of the Year. We're also going to have Steve Waldeck, number 24, the senior defenseman and captain, going to be running on faceoffs. But you're also probably going to see Timmy Trenkel, the junior from Comac, number 20, get out there as well on offense. Adam Rand's going to sit down for the faceoffs. He's number 10. He's from Niantic, Connecticut, a junior. In goal, you'll see Charlie Parr, number 22 all night, the senior. And on the close defense, you'll see Mike Sopko, number 28, a local product from Shoreham Wading River. You'll also see Brian Reinert from Pennsylvania, number 16. And you'll also see the remaining starting defenseman, which is Christian Litt, number 9, the fifth-year senior from Cicero in North Syracuse. So that's going to be the starting lineup for Stony Brook. We've talked a little bit the last couple games now about how Coach Soule has gone to the well more in the game, substituting players in, probably because the weather's getting hotter and you've had some injuries as the season wears on. I'd expect that we'd see some of the bench get out there and contribute tonight as well.
Well, you know, you're looking at a situation that Stony Brook, this Tuesday evening game, can work into their favor. They've only had a couple days to prepare for the playoff game. It's the same team you really prepared for on Saturday. But it's going to be very interesting to see. This first 10 minutes of this game could be the most important for the Vermont Catamounts to be in this game. Just from, you know, again, wearing my coaching hat, I would say that Stony Brook Seawolves have to jump out on Vermont very early. Let them know that it's going to be a tough night here at Laval Stadium. Don't give them any hope and start out with a quick face-off and pump them in as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
It looks like we're going to get started here for our national anthem, and we'll pause for the anthem.
Fans. Welcome to Kenneth P. Laval Stadium for the 2010 America's Men's Lacrosse Championship. Tonight's semifinal game features the Stony Brook Seawolves and the Vermont Catamounts. And now let's meet the starters for the Catamounts. At attack, number 2, Derek Lechfus. On attack, number 3, Liam Thomas. And at attack, number 7, Jeff Worley. The midfield, number 15, Garrett Virtue. Number 17, Drew Feely. And number 40, Cal Case. On defense, number 9, Evan O'Brien. Number 11, Matt Jankow. Number 33, Granger Jewett. And in goal, number 4, David Barton. Vermont is coached by Ryan Curtis. He is assisted by Colin Holme and Kevin Bowman. And now the starters for the Seawolves. On attack, number 11, Jordan McBride. Number 12, Kyle Belton. And number 23, Tom Compitello. The starting midfield, number 20, Timmy Trenkel. Number 21, Kevin Crowley. And number 37, Robbie Campbell. On defense, number 9, Christian Litt. Number 24, Stephen Waldeck. And number 29, Michael Sapko. And starting in goal, number 22, Charlie Parr. Stony Bridge is coached by Rick Soule. He is assisted by Jim Montana and Brian Wellner. At this time, we ask you to please rise, remove your caps, and join our players, coaches, and officials in honoring America and those who protect our freedoms with the playing of our national anthem.
Gorgeous evening here at Laval Stadium. Just getting ready for a face-off here between the Catamounts and the Seawolves. As always, a late-coming crowd at Stony Brook Laval Stadium. But, you know, it should be an interesting night of lacrosse. Stony Brook right now in the catbird seat, number one in the America East. Just have to get through the next 120 minutes, and they'll be in the NCAA tournament.
Mm-hmm, that's right. Win the automatic qualifier. Now, there is an outside chance that if they don't win the tournament, they could get an at-large bid to the tournament. But those are very thin. There's only a couple at-large bids that are going to be remaining, and it's going to be tough for Stony Brook, which doesn't have a lot of huge wins this year. The biggest wins are over Towson, Delaware, Siena, maybe even UMBC. So that's going to help, but it might not be enough. What you got to do is win this tournament. Coaches are shaking hands. Players are going out to midfield to meet with the referees. Vermont in their usual green helmets with yellow trim, green jerseys with yellow trim, white numbers, green undershirts, green shorts with yellow trim. Stony Brook, as we said, head to toe in white today with red numbers. And sun is blaring right at the press box here. It's kind of warm. Not much of a crowd, as you mentioned, Brendan. They are latecomers. Probably some people tailgating in the parking lot, but there's at least a few hundred people out here.
A lot of students studying.
A lot of students studying because it's finals. And as always at Laval Stadium, we have the customary Canadian and American flags at the 50-yard line, courtesy of former coach Ron Laval, who's sitting right in front of us outside.
And it looks like it's going to be Frasca for Vermont and Rand for the face-off between the Seawolves and Catamounts in the 2010 America East semifinals.
And off of the face-off, ball's on the ground. And it looks like Kevin Crowley picks up the ball, but he's stuck on his seat. And it's going to be picked up by number 28. That's A.J. Masson. He's going to drive down the right side. And he's going to pass it off to number 2. That's going to be Derek Lickfist. Shoots wide. It's going to go out. And Vermont's going to rebound the ball. Steve Waldeck pushes an attacker outside. That was Jeff Worley. And another loose ball. Steve Waldeck's going to chase it up to the top left corner of the box. And now Mike Sapko is going to be there to help. And loose ball is still being fought over. It's kind of an ugly play so far. And number 3, Von Zellegal, the junior from Albany, comes up with it. And he's going to clear the ball up the right side. He's going to step it into the box, push it in transition to to Jared Laverne, who drops the ball. And it's going to be picked up by Barton, the goalie, who's going to get a clear. Stony Brook's not going to ride hard. They're going to shift back and let Vermont clear the ball. Barton with the ball again. He passes upfield to number 16.
That's Plavner.
That's Plavner, correction goal. That's not Barton in goal. I guess our starting lineups were incorrect. And Garrett Virtue is going to take the ball to X. He's going to invert.
Correction on that. That was number 15 with the possession. That was Garrett Virtue with possession of the ball. And the Seawolves are now on defense. And Frank has the play.
And Liam Thomas gets the ball in the top right of the box. He's going to pass it off to number 10, I believe that. Or is that 40? That's Cal Case at midfield. Calcase drives to the cage. He passes it off to Worley. Worley over the top, and he throws the ball away. And that's going to be Von Zelligal with the interception. He's going to bring the ball right up the middle of the field, and he's looking for transition, but he's got nothing, so he's going to step in the box and move it out to Competello. Competello brings it to the goal line, over to X to Kyle Belton, number 12, the sophomore from British Columbia. He's going to slow the ball down, take it up to the top right corner of the box as Robbie Campbell comes on. Robbie Campbell takes the ball in his usual right-handed stance to the top right corner of the box, and he's also going to slow it down after stepping in. And throws a box fake. We expect that from our Canadian players. Over to Timmy Trenkel. Trenkel over to Belton on the left side of the box. Belton's going to step down below the goal line. McBride's going to set a pick. Nothing there. Over to Competello, and then up to Robbie Campbell again. Robbie Campbell's going to move the ball to Timmy Trenkel up top. He's going to drive down to the right pipe and spin around. He's got nothing there. Back up to Kevin Crowley. Crowley feeds inside to McBride. McBride, big shot from 10 yards out, but big save by... That's not Barton, correct?
That is Barton.
That is Barton in cage. Big save by Barton. And he moves the ball into the corner to be cleared. That's number nine, Evan O'Brien, clears the ball up the right side. Kevin Crowley breaks it up. He picks up the ground ball at midfield, and he's going to move it up into the box and slow the ball down.
Good defense right there by the Seawolves on the ride. Crowley having a sense to slow this game down right now. Stonebrook doesn't play a lot of midfielders, and they have possession behind goal line extended.
Yeah, and that's Kevin Corelli bringing number one Ryan Gillette behind the goal for an invert. And he's going to drive up the right side of the field, and he's got nothing. Moves it up to Timmy Trenkel up top. Timmy Trenkel is marked up by O'Brien, number nine. And moves it down to Competello, who beats his man. Looks inside for feed, has nothing. Gets it back up top to Timmy Trenkel. Timmy Trenkel over to Robbie Campbell up top. He's going to slow it down again. McBride sets a pick. He is being locked off by a long pole this time around. That's Granger Jouette. And ball's up top to Kevin Crowley. Stony Brook coming out in the 1-4-1, playing it real wide. The flag is down. Timmy Trenkel is going to take the ball down to X. Not really an invert because he's getting the long stick midfield. So is Kevin Crowley, though. Interesting. And Vermont's going to go into their diamond defense in his zone while Stony Brook has the ball under the goal line extended. Trenkel still looking around. He's going to get double-teamed, and he's going to lose his stick and the ball. And the ref's going to blow the whistle. That was a play on for a flag. So 11:14 left in the first quarter. 0-0 on the board. Both teams got a shot off. And it looks like Vermont's going to sit down for a flag. I think that flag
too
was
many,
on...
Too many men on the field.
Too many men on the field. So who's going to serve it? It's going to be Cal Case, I think. No, it's going to be number one serving that. That's going to be Ryan Gillette, the short stick D midfielder. Stony Brook sends out their extra man unit. Vermont comes out in their box in one, locking off Jordan McBride in the crease. Ball's being whipped around to the bottom right. Back up to, that's Tyler McCabe, over to Competello. Up top to Crowley. Crowley skips the ball down. Back over to Competello. Competello cross, and McCabe shoots wide. And Tim Hawkins, the freshman left-hander from Rocky Point, backs up the cage.
Good ball movement by the Stony Brook Seawolves, showing a 2-3-1 offense on man up.
And back up to Competello on the top left. Over to Crowley. Crowley over to McCabe. McCabe up top to Crowley. Crowley skips it down to Belton. Belton across the crease, and Hawkins can't handle one in the sun. And
the
it goes.
Sun gets in your eyes on goal line extended here at Laval Stadium.
Especially at this time of day, the sun is looking right at you when you're facing, I guess that's west or northwest. So 10:48 left in the first quarter, still 0-0. And it looks like Vermont's going to clear the ball in the back left corner of the box with a short stick. And over to Barton. Barton's getting harassed by Belton. Barton moves the ball upfield to the top right to number 11. That's going to be Matt Jankow, who's going to step it over, and Von Zelligal is going to mark him up. Barton with the long pole, bringing the ball down to the right corner of the box, over to number 7. That's Jeff Worley, the attackman. He's going to slow it down. He's marked up by Christian Gillette.
And Stormbrook showing a man-to-man defense, very tight, closely guarded, extending out on the adjacent plays, and Vermont now has the ball at X.
10 minutes left in the first quarter. A.J. Masson has the ball behind. They're going to move it up top to number 40. That's Cal Case. Cal Case is going to take it in his left hand, step in the box. And back over to number 15, that's Garrett Virtue, who's going to have the ball up top now. Garrett Virtue drives with the left hand. He's marked up by Von Zelligal. He's got nothing inside so far. He's going to bring it behind the goal line, look up top for feed, and has nothing. And now he feeds around the left side over to Cal Case. Cal Case has no shot. He wraps around the cage. And skips the pass over to 17. That's Drew Feely. Feely down to the corner over to Garrett Virtue. Virtue's got the invert. He's got a short stick under the goal line. And going to set a pick for him is Jeff Worley. and he moves back into the crease. So Virtue drives the ball up the left side. I'm sorry, that's Worley. Worley feeds a pass inside, hits someone in the head, and that's going to go out of bounds. Vermont's going to keep the ball. Cal Case is going to take it in the top right corner of the box.
And once again, Vermont throwing the ball away.
Yeah, we saw that the other day, and we welcome a longtime radio caller here, Matt Mankiewicz, back to the set.
Yeah, you're doing a great job, Frank.
Thanks, Matt.
Okay. You want to take it over for the rest of the quarter? Whatever. Okay, well, we can take it from here. Well, in any case,
it's going to be Seawolves' ball.
Yep, and we'll set everything up for you as far as Seawolves are concerned, and it will be taken at midfield. Actually, it'll be taken at the restraining line. It'll be brought in by Chris Ginlett. 9:23 left. No score here between the Stony Brook Seawolves and Vermont Catamounts. Semifinal action, America East Conference Tournament here at Laval Stadium. Charlie Parr, outlet pass to Kevin Crowley. He'll step inside the box, and the Seawolves have successfully cleared. Around to the X, that's Compitello. Compitello will hug the end line and go back toward the corner. And the offense is spread out right now. Timmy Trenkel on the left elbow. Back to Crowley in neutral territory. Back to Trenkel over on the left side. And Crowley will take it to the top. Going to the right side to Campbell. Campbell looking to penetrate. Does have the angle. Looked like he had an opening there. Thinks better of it. He'll back it out. Back over to Crowley. Trenkel on the left side. Now Trenkel dodging to his left at the doorstep. Nope. Going to the X to Compitello. Compitello feed to Campbell. Campbell shoots. And what a save
by Barton.
Yep, that is Barton in goal now, the Vermont goalie, and Vermont now looking to clear.
Big ride by Kyle Belton on a trail check. He gets the ball out, moves it up to, it's going to be McBride, but McBride drops it.
Yep, and Belton took it away. Now Belton gets it knocked loose. It goes back towards the far side of the restraining box, eventually picked up by Crowley. Crowley gets a shot off. It goes off the stick of the Vermont goalie, David Barton, and into the net, and the Seawolves are on the board, 1-0.
Garbage goal by the Seawolves, comes out of the ground ball. Crowley has a great look at the cage, kind of, you know, sneaks it by the goalie for Vermont Barton, and the Stony Brook Seawolves now lead 1-0 with 8:19 remaining.
So we go back to the face-off, and these guys have seen a lot of each other in the past few days. As we go back to the usual suspects, that's Frasca and Rand, and Rand looked like he got a little bit of an edge there. The ball has not yet kicked out between the two of them, and no procedure call yet either. It's loose, and it's going to get picked up by Rand in neutral territory near the Vermont bench. And he's going to pass it off to Compitello on the right side of the box. He's done his job, and the offense will get set to do theirs. Off the pick set by McBride. Compitello will come out about even with the net all the way to the far side. Now you see the two mids coming in. McCabe getting a touch, now handing off to Adams. Adams will now pass around to Belton. Belton will invert off the pick set by Compitello, about even with the net again on the far side, and he'll pass to McCabe on the far side. Now in neutral territory, Randazzo coming in on the action. Randazzo stepping inside on the lower right side of the box, the right elbow, and bring it back up to the top to Adams and around again to McCabe on the far side. McBride setting a pick once again for McCabe, and he'll bring it back to Compitello at the X. Compitello going to the right side of the net, looking for a wraparound. Doesn't have it. He will feed, get a low sweeping shot that was taken by, I believe that was Belton, but no problem. It was not a very strong shot, picked up by Barton, and Vermont will be looking to clear.
Another big save by Barton. I think he has four already. 7 minutes left in the first quarter. 1-0 Stony Brook.
So Jankow, with the long stick, will take it into the box for the Vermont Catamounts. And the first thing he does is get off to Liam Thomas, one of the second team attackman in the America East. And they'll work it around to Drew Feely, who's another second teamer. And he's only a freshman. He'll work his way up to the first team soon enough. He'll come back to the X and pass back to the top of the box to Kyle Smicky. And around once again, we get to see Augie Remyan, the two mids for Vermont. He's got to work his way around Laverne. Instead, he dumps it back to the corner once again to Feely. Feely will work off a pick set by his partner, Jeff Worley, and he'll come back around, guarded by Ginlett. They'll bring it right around to the right elbow and back up to the top again to Smicky. Smicky trying a line drive shot, and Parr saw it all the way.
They didn't learn their lesson on Saturday night, because that shot wasn't going in on Saturday night, and it's not going in today.
Getting hit from behind was Sopko. He got the ball knocked loose, but Parr recovered, so he gets the outlet pass to Laverne, and Laverne will complete the clear. He'll step out just inside the box, get back behind the midfield line. Actually, he's going to actually bang into one of his own guys. He banged into Crowley, and he has to hold on to it for a little bit before he finally hands off to Competello. Competello will bring it back to the X to Belton. 5:41 remaining in the first. Sewell's up 1-0. Drifting all the way to the far side is Crowley. He'll pass to Trenkel in neutral territory, and Trenkel is going to wait for Campbell to get in on the action, but Trenkel's still cradling on the left elbow of the restraining box. Now he flips it to Campbell. Campbell's on the left side in his usual spot. Campbell about even with the net now, looking to penetrate, getting around to the left side of the slot, now going to Trenkel on the right, now coming around to Belton, back to the X to Competello. Competello now will go towards the sideline and get a pass out to Campbell, and back again to Trenkel in neutral territory as we get inside 5 minutes. Trenkel doing a dodge. Trenkel going down low. Trenkel firing to Crowley, and did he get it in? Looked like he got it under the crossbar. Might have bounced off it. Still being fought for in front of the crease. And finally, the ref blows a whistle, and let's see who finally fell on it.
It's going to be Stony Brook withholding the ball. It's going to be Vermont's ball.
Yep, and Vermont and Stony Brook probably should have gotten that one, but unfortunately, there are no overhead cameras at Laval Stadium, so we're not quite sure if it went in or not. Probably did go off the crossbar, but it's still 1-0 in Vermont looking to clear. And having a tough time of it, too, is Kyle Belton throws himself around, makes Josh Arison's life a little bit difficult. And now the outlet pass goes right into a couple of white shirts now, white helmets, and finally picked up by Vermont. And that was A.J.